Hello, everyone. This is Chris Manning from Locked On Cavaliers. On today's show, I had a conversation with Dave Zirin, the sports editor at The Nation, the host of the Edge of Sports podcast, and the host of The Collision with Ethan Thomas, about potential protest in the NBA in the vein of Colin Kaepernick, who, as you probably know, is the 49ers quarterback who knelt for the national anthem and continues to do so in protest of some ongoing violence in America. Dave is a politically smart guy who just happens to cover sports, and he maybe knows this topic better than anyone. And for this audience, for this Cleveland Cavaliers fan audience, I think this is a relevant conversation because the Cavaliers happen to have LeBron James, who has been at the forefront of these political conversations that are happening in sports, and he addressed them in Media Day. So Dave and I talked for about 30 minutes about this, a little bit about some other stuff at the end, but he was great. This is maybe my favorite podcast to date. It actually is my favorite podcast to date, bar none. And I think it's an important one to have, an important one to have, because we need to push forward these conversations and have them. So just as a note, you will hear us reference some LeBron James comments. And because I want to make sure everyone hears them before listening, before we get into the show, you're going to hear LeBron's comments from Media Day about protests and about violence in America. He talks about his son, and I just need you to hear those comments before you listen. I appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate this audience. Hope you enjoy the show. If you have any comments, please reach out. You can reach me on Twitter at CWMWrites. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Cavs. You can email the show at lockedoncavs@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook. Just reach out if you have any questions, whatever. Hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back tomorrow with another show.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
This episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning from Fear the Sword and Hardwood Proctism. Today I have someone I'm really excited to have on the show to talk about something I think that's a little bit more important than we normally talk about, that has a little bit more societal weight to it. It's Dave Zirin. He's the sports editor at The Nation.
the host of the Edge of Sports podcast, the co-host of The Collision with Ethan Thomas, and you've probably seen his work in Slam Magazine. So, Dave, thanks for being on the show, and how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
No, I really appreciate it. So we'll just hop right into this. We'll start with LeBron. He obviously was in the headlines last week, and the listeners, you'll hear his full quote from Media Day prior to this before we got into this interview, but he took a lot of hate for it on social media. And I think some of it was
pretty unfair hit, I think.
Yeah, some of it was because he did say he did say All Lives Matter, but I think how people interpreted it was a little bit out of context of what he was saying. But what did you make of it, what he said?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, first and foremost, LeBron and Steph Curry are saying very similar things, and I don't think that's by accident. I think this is the line that a lot of NBA superstars are going to try to walk, which is defending Colin Kaepernick, saying that we have a serious problem on our hands, but also saying that they are going to stand for the anthem. And, you know, and my belief is, you know, that ain't half bad, you know, given where we've been in terms of sports and politics, that they're defending somebody in Colin Kaepernick who is in no uncertain terms calling out racism and saying we need profound structural change to fight police brutality. I think that that's an important thing for stars of their caliber to do. And you know what? Taking the kind of anthem stance, taking a knee or raising your fist, that's truly not for everybody. And that's part of what makes doing it brave, or I guess depending on your perspective, reckless and wrong. I mean, that's but either way, that's part of what makes it special, is that it's not something that everybody has the stomach for in terms of the fallout and everything that you're going to have to deal with. And so, you know, and that's a personal decision that athletes have to make. So, I mean, I think the fact that he's defending Kaepernick's right to do it, as opposed to saying what people like Russell Wilson and Jerry Rice said early on about Kaepernick, which is, well, I agree with the issue, but not the method, I think that's fine. And I think that's important. Now, as for the All Lives Matter thing, I also think that that was a very unfair attack on him. Because first and foremost, but I understand it too, because if you're just on social media and you don't have time to listen to the whole clip or Media Day, and you hear that, all you hear is that LeBron said All Lives Matter, the response, if you're in any way, shape, or form connected to the movement against police violence, is going to be to say, oh, hell no. Because All Lives Matter has been a buzzword of, to be not just the right wing in this country, but white supremacists. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the phraseology that they use. They say All Lives Matter, but oddly, by All Lives Matter, somehow that means they could care less when black people are killed by police. So it's an ugly phrase that's taken on a very ugly connotation and context. But if you listen to what LeBron is saying, he's very specifically talking about the fears he has for his own son. And then he says it's so important for all lives to matter. So what he's trying to say is that it's very important for black lives to matter. And yeah. So that was unfair. That was very unfair. And I thought that LeBron also spoke very poignantly. Again, we live in a soundbite culture, which doesn't usually lend itself to either nuance or full statements. But when he spoke about the fears he has for his 12-year-old son, I mean, you really would have to be made of stone to not hear the fears of a father who has prepared his son in terms of wealth, in terms of education, in terms of all manner of privilege, yet he can't protect him from being in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong officer. And that obviously is something that keeps him up at night. And I thought that was a very important thing for him to say. I just hope people hear it.
Yeah, I mean, having been there at Media Day, Media Days are obviously very, they're a little less serious than I think than other things maybe. But you could just tell, and by looking at him and listening to the tone of his voice, how seriously he took it. How seriously other Cavaliers and members of the organization took it. But aside from what he said that day, LeBron has been at the forefront of this politically in a lot of ways. He spoke at the ESPYs with Wade and CP3 and Carmelo. He and the Heat teammates wore hoodies after Trayvon Martin was killed by Zimmerman. He wore the I Can't Breathe t-shirt in a game in New York.
Sure.
He was
the first major athlete to call for Donald Sterling to be kicked out of the NBA.
Yeah, it's another thing.
These aren't small things that LeBron has been a part of, but the thing about movements, Chris, is that the bar is constantly being raised and the stakes are constantly being raised. And so it's like when we saw LeBron and Carmelo and CP3 and Dwayne Wade speak at the ESPYs, that took a lot of our breath away. But then Colin Kaepernick takes a knee and speaks much less about the need to build bridges and much more about the need to take a side and fight for change. And all of a sudden, that looks more timid than maybe it did when it happened in real time. And right. So the bar keeps getting raised, and you got to respond to that.
Right. So I get, for me, what that makes me think, as this conversation continues and as the NBA season gets going, is a player, if it's him or someone of his caliber, and there's very few players of his stature and caliber, do they have to be the ones to lead that type of protest? And what would him kneeling or sitting for the anthem decide to do if he decided to do it?
First of all, let's remember, Colin Kaepernick is a backup quarterback right now on a bad football. So, it doesn't have to be the star players to make this kind of change. The only advantage of it being a star player is that it provides cover for other players who want to do something. Because you can't kick an Iman Shumpert off a team or blackball him from the league if he's doing something that LeBron James is doing. So it creates just more space for people to be political and not end up like Craig Hodges or Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf in the 1990s, political players who found themselves drummed out of the league. So it certainly helps when in terms of getting the message out. And that's what it really is all about. I mean, when you said, like, what good does it do? What does it do? Well, what it does is it imposes a conversation on spaces that are not usually having this conversation. And that's the only way we're really going to see, I think, systemic change truly happen in this country is when the white majority says, wait a minute, the killing of unarmed black people is a problem and we need to do something about it. But it's impossible to have that discussion unless the discussion happens.
Right.
And I think that's the incredible power of athletes speaking out on these issues because it, especially in basketball and football, because it's majority black athletes who disproportionately come from poor backgrounds, as LeBron does, who are given a microphone and a platform to speak to a country that otherwise wouldn't hear people who came from where they came from.
Right. And I think also that locally, LeBron has obviously just so much sway and so much influence on the Cleveland community. And it's also a community where Tamir Rice was killed. Locally, there have been high school athletes that have knelt Rodney Axon in a suburb 20 minutes south, knelt and then was threatened. Do you think he has any sort of do you think where he's playing and where he's from has any impact on how he's viewed and any that'll put any more pressure on him to maybe say something or do something more than what he said he'll do so far?
I think the Tamir Rice case raised the temperature on him, and I know a lot of people were very disappointed that he didn't say more about Tamir Rice, and that led to a different discussion, like, why do we care if he says something about Tamir Rice? What does it mean? And there were a lot of folks who defended his right to just say what he said, which is, I'm not familiar with the case, I'm not going to speak about it. The point that I made is, while at the time, was like, while in theory, I agree with that about athletes, that it's wrong to expect athletes to play some sort of special role, or particularly black athletes, to have some special weight on their shoulders to be spokespeople. LeBron had explicitly put himself out there and say, I'm coming back not even because I love the Cavaliers. I mean, you look at his Sports Illustrated statement, because I'm coming back for Northeast Ohio. I'm coming back for the kids of Cleveland. For me, this is bigger than basketball, and it is bigger than this franchise. I mean, we've never had an athlete of LeBron's caliber make such an aggressive statement of saying, I'm taking social responsibility. And so when you do that, I don't think you should be surprised when people try to call you on it. When you use Public Enemy songs in your commercials, when you say, I want the weight, when you say, as LeBron said early in his career, I want to be remembered like a global icon like Muhammad Ali, when you say these things, it really should not be seen as out of bounds if someone says, hey, this grave injustice just took place in your backyard. Do you have anything to say about it? Because that's a mantle he's taken. That's not one we're imposing upon him, which often mm-hmm. does happen in sports, particularly to black athletes, and I do think that's unfair. The way it happened often with Tiger Woods to be somehow like the voice against bigotry in golf, as if someone like Phil Mickelson doesn't have also a responsibility to speak out about that.
Right. The NBA and NFL are just fundamentally, they're different leagues in a lot of ways. They approach things different ways. They've been more, the NBA, I mean, David Griffin was willing to talk about this and wanted to talk about the systemic violence in this country. But do you think the NBA just would respond to a player deciding to sit for the anthem, especially because then you have a rule that you have to be standing for the national anthem. You have to be kind of observing for the anthem.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you say that you ask, because it's so interesting to me that the NFL, of course, you know, it's called the No Fun League. They fine players for wearing the wrong color shoelaces. And the NBA is a league that's always prided itself on being, you know, more open, more socially liberal, the first league to, you know, have a campaign against homophobia. I mean, a really kind of different approach, particularly under Adam Silver. And I want to emphasize that, particularly under Adam Silver, which in an odd way, I think it hurt the NBA, if I just digress for a second, because I think it actually has hurt the NBA in terms of being honest about its own history, that it wasn't David Stern up there at the lectern who had to answer the question, why was Donald Sterling coddled for 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that question was never answered.
Yeah.
You know, while Adam Silver said explicitly that it wasn't just about him with his recorded comments about Magic Johnson, it was about, you know, his history. And that history has been well known for some time and has been written about for many, many years. Hell, I wrote about it 10 years before he was knocked out, as one of the first big pieces I wrote. It was about Donald Sterling and his practice as a landlord. And David Stern never had to answer that question, which is not a good thing for a league that wants to be honest and about its own history. But it is interesting that the NFL has no rules about standing for the anthem, and the NBA does. Now, I think the players in the WNBA have already set a precedent that says that the NBA is not going to do anything if a player takes any form of protest. The Indiana Fever all took a knee during the playoffs. And to be clear, just so listeners know this, the WNBA is under the same dictates and rules as mm-hmm. the NBA. Just so everybody is clear about that. And that Adam Silver has been involved in discussions, and I know this from my own reporting, with I believe it is Lisa Borders, the head of the WNBA. They've been in discussion about the decision to first define players when they wore their black T-shirts over the summer, and then to rescind those fines when the players went public and said, we're not going to pay them. So all of these, so that's the precedent that's been set by the WNBA. And I think that's also why Adam Silver and Michelle Roberts, who's the head of the NBA Players Association, they sent a letter to every single NBA player and leaked that letter to the Associated Press saying that they were setting up channels and avenues for any player who wanted to be involved in any sort of social justice, meaningful dialogue with community leaders, with police. They just have to contact the NBA or the union, and they'll put them to work at that. And I think that's very admirable, but at the same time, I also think it's kind of transparent that it's an effort to say, here, we've got your back if you want to do something, and because we're being responsive, let's keep the politics off the court.
Mm-hmm. When you look ahead at the NBA season, do you think we will see players protest like Colin Kaepernick did?
There's no question about it in my mind that we're going to see it. And tragic, I mean, we're going to see it for one reason that's very positive and one reason that I think is utterly tragic. The reason why we're going to see it in a way that's totally positive is because we've already heard from players like Victor Oladipo and Iman Shumpert who actually seem excited, who feel a little bit left out, you know, almost. You know, they're looking at what some of the NFL guys are doing, and they're like, hey, I want to be a link in that chain. And also, NBA players, individual players, have such a higher Q rating than NFL players. In other words, recognizability. Like, Iman Shumpert, I keep going back to him, but, you know, this is a role player.
He's very much a role player.
Very much a role player. He walks down the street right now in Washington, D.C. I'll bet you he gets mobbed. You know, people are going to know who that is. And look at some of the players who've raised their fist or taken a knee in the National Football League. I mean, with the exception of Kaepernick, who's really only known because of his, you know, time in the Super Bowl and spotlight and commercial ads. You know, these are anonymous people. Like Marcus Peters could walk down the street here. Kenny Stills could walk down the street. People wouldn't know who they were. You know, it's and this has to do with how the league has leagues market themselves. The NFL has always marketed itself on the basis of the uniforms and the teams. And that's just smart because your next play could be your last. So if you tie everybody, you know, it's like you got to love the Chiefs because you got to love Marcus Peters. Well, what happens if he tears up his knee? No more Marcus Peters. The NBA has always marketed the faces of the players. And obviously a huge difference in terms of, you know, the amount of clothing they wear, the proximity to the court. It's just a much more personal relationship. And so, I mean, and it's, you know, I'd be hard pressed to think of, you know, any NBA player who, if they took a knee, it wouldn't cause some sort of stir, because all of them, with very few exceptions, I think every NBA player to the average fan is kind of recognizable at this point. I mean, you should see, like, my kid, he's 8 years old. I mean, he plays NBA 2K16 and free online games. I mean, he knows NBA rosters better than I do. Yeah. And like down to the last person on each team. And it's, you know, and he's asking, like, oh, what do you think of Tyler Johnson? I'm like, I barely have a grasp of Tyler Johnson. Barely. Yeah. And he knows the faces, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And each of these names for him is like, for me growing up, Han Solo and Boba Fett. You know, they're his action figures.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's true. And I mean, I think Shumpert is a very unique case because, A, he has a developing persona off the court. He was obviously in a Kanye West video with his wife, or with fiancée, Teyana Taylor. He rapped, a couple weeks ago and said, I'm going to kneel for the anthem. And he's backtracked on that a little bit. And backtracking is an unfair way to put it because he talked about it with the team and he seemed to be, he wants to talk about it with the organization. But, that to me was interesting because I think there will be situations like that. Like a team like the Cavs, they want to be unified in that sense. And that's just how they approach things, I think. But I think it'd be unfair to expect every team to be the way. And I think I agree with you. I expect players to protest. When do you think it'll be in preseason games? Do you think it'll be in the regular season? And do you think it's going to happen right away?
Well, yeah, and I didn't get to the second half of this. But
yeah, right.
The positive thing is because of that there are players who seem to be excited to do something. The tragic thing is that, I mean, my goodness, we know that this is an ongoing problem. So the hashtags are to come. In other words, there are people who are going to die at the hands of police. That will happen. And when that happens, unarmed black men and women will be shot and will be killed. And when that happens, there will be a push, a call, a pressure for there to be a legitimate reaction by NBA players. And they'll take that reaction. And we've seen this just in the last couple of weeks in not just the NFL, but high school games around the country, not just football, but volleyball. I mean, for some reason, has been like a big one, like women's volleyball. You've seen high school players take a knee all over the country. Hell, you've seen the University of Michigan, you know, the same place where Jim Harbaugh said that he didn't want his players doing anything. Michigan players raising their fist and taking a knee because of Keith Lamont Scott and because of Terrence Crutcher. And now just this week where I live in D.C., a guy named Terrence Sterling. And you know, these things are not stopping. And so when it flares up again, there'll be more pressure on NBA players to do something. And I think they're going to respond. There's no reason to think they wouldn't respond based on what
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair. And I think it'll be interesting to see how it does play out just because, like you said, and we talked about earlier, if a guy like LeBron or Steph Curry has to sit, it easily allows other guys to do the same thing. But if, you know, if it's a Amon Shumpert, how does the react? That to me would be a very fascinating thing. If a guy like Shumpert or if a guy that's the eighth guy on the bench who maybe plays 15 minutes a game and doesn't have a shoe deal or something like that, how that guy is perceived and how that guy is treated by the league, that to me is going to be pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it will be interesting, and it's also there will be like a lot of team pressure on players to not do anything, and I hope, God, I really hope players who get that pressure remember that one of the most, you know, outspoken athletes in the history of sports is Bill Russell, and he won 11 championships in 13 years, so I don't think he distracted the Boston Celtics from taking care of business.
No.
And as you know, and I do a radio show with Etan Thomas, who spent 10 years in the NBA, and he laughs so hard at the whole idea about like political distractions on a team, because he's like first of all, you know, it's a job, so you know, you show up, you do your job. Second of all, distractions come in all kinds of forms, and they're there all the time. People have personal drama, kids, divorce. Sometimes teammates fighting over a particular woman who they're into. I mean, we never hear about this stuff, but the distraction, so the idea that it would be a distraction if someone says, gee, I don't like police violence, you know, in the context of the swirling distractions that exist in every pro sports locker room, it's an absurdity, but it's something that's used by management as a way to keep players in line, because it's the political protest that actually affects, or as they are afraid, affect the bottom line of a team. So it's not about winning, it's about money.
Yeah. And I guess the last question, I mean, from as you've covered this and you've observed this, has there actually been, in the NFL, as some sort of a case study for this, has there been, like, do you think there have been fans that have stopped actually watching because a guy like Kaepernick is protesting? Like, do you think that's actually happened in a widespread
way? There's some online polls that I think and most people think are absolute hogwash, you know, where it's just angry fans or people who are, you know, political on the right, who are like 44% of fans. But there's nothing really to justify that. At the end of the day, this is what it comes down to. When there are good games on television, the ratings are good. When there are bad games, when there are blowouts, when there are steaming loads like that Bengals-Dolphins game that was on Thursday night, you know, where the best player on the field is the field goal kicker for the Bengals, you know, that's just not going to get the same ratings. So give me a break. You know, the NFL is just platinum. No one's not watching because of Colin Kaepernick. They do not like Colin Kaepernick. But if anything, you see that Kaepernick has been polarizing, because on the one hand, he was voted the player that fans hate the most. On the other hand, he's got the league's best-selling jersey. So it's like, you tell me. I mean, it's the opposite of love is not hate, but indifference.
Yeah.
But I will say, as long as I'm on the show, I mean, I also, just before we go, I want to say thank you to the whole Cleveland Cavs community, because, I mean, it was such a joy to watch that playoff run for me. I mean, I'm a diehard Wizards fan, and I grew up a Knicks fan, so I had the wonderful stress. Actually, it was great, because I get really, really, really stressed during the playoffs.
Yeah.
And it's great, you know, like, I mean, ridiculous. Like, I walk in and out of the room, I'm a hot mess. And so it was actually a joy to just be like, you know what, I'm rooting for Cleveland. Because, you know, right now I'm writing a book, and I've been writing it since 2014, a political biography of Jim Brown. And so much of the book was built around, you know, Cleveland, last championship in 1964. And so I'm like, you know, I'm kind of rooting for Cleveland, because I'm also like, what a great way to end the book. You know, the idea of the curse finally broken, you know, and I had no idea there would be a literal passing of the trophy from Brown to LeBron at the ceremony. But to have that happen was just such a great way to end the book. And it's just, it was a remarkable thing to watch, especially because a lot of the regular season sort of felt like a hot mess. And to see them like just get together for the playoffs and do it, to see them come down, back down from 3-1, and to see LeBron, I mean, I got to tell you, it's like, I really feel like, I know LeBron says, you know, he's chasing Michael and, you know, 6 championships, whatever. I said this when he went to Cleveland. I said, like, 1 championship in Cleveland is worth 10 championships in Miami.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it, you know, that's what makes this so great. Like, LeBron, I believe someone else used this line, but it's always in my head. I feel like LeBron dropped the mic for his whole career.
Yeah. And no, I mean, he did.
Enshrined that he is a You know, I leave the centers out of the discussion for a second, and, you know, it's him and Jordan.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty awesome place to be, given the expectations that were foisted upon him coming out of high school.
Yeah, I literally just am out of college. Like, I was not around for, like, the 80s Cavs. I mean, I know about them now, but I've never seen the city I grew up in when I came home from school to actually see them just react that way and see how much a city just beloved this guy and how much it just changed the mood of a city. I mean, if the Browns were this bad 2 years ago, it would have been, like, the worst thing in the world. But it's, like, the mood has changed because LeBron won. People believe in the Cleveland baseball team because of LeBron. They still got to stop using the name, but they are in this.
Yeah.
They believe.
I'm with you there.
Yeah, it's
but
really bad.
But it's a beautiful, but they're having a great season. And this was once called, you know, the City of Champions. And this is some of the things I write about in the Jim Brown book, is that it really, sports really, it felt like it was mirroring the city's fortunes.
Yeah.
So you've got a city in decline and you've got its sports teams in decline. And this brutal kind of parallel between the two. And then LeBron leaves Cleveland to Miami. It becomes so symbolic of the city of Cleveland, Northeast Ohio, you know, educating and raising people who are, you know, intelligent and brilliant, and yet they feel like they have to leave to reach their true potential.
Yeah.
And that's brutal. And so LeBron coming back, I mean, it has a value to it that is utterly unique. And I hate bragging about this, but I'm going to brag just for a second because I'm wrong about so much, particularly when it comes to predictions. But you could look this up, Chris. I wrote, a year before LeBron went to Cleveland, I wrote an article predicting he'd go to Cleveland. He'd return home. And people are like, no way, Dan Gilbert burned the bridge. You know, no way. It's Kyrie's team, whatever the hell that meant. You know, it's no way. There's too much hatred for him. It'll never happen. No way LeBron would never want to come back the way he was treated. But the reason why I always thought he would come back is I always thought of LeBron as somebody who, was more than any other athlete, was self-conscious about his own narrative. Like somebody who was taking a step back and being like, what do I want my career to look like when I'm 40 years old? And I think the narrative of going back to Cleveland was irresistible for him. And I'm glad it was, because it gave us, I think, the best story in sports in the last decade.
Yeah, and I'm a little biased because I'm from Cleveland, and I cover the team, but I don't think you're wrong in saying it's the best sports story in quite a long time. It's just so many layers to it. Just so many different ways you can look at it and still make it interesting and still make it just a very, very rare thing that it's hard to imagine a scenario like that replicating itself again, just for so many reasons of how it happened.
And I loved, I said this at the time, I'll say it again, it's like, I love the way that finals ended, because it was so perfect for Cleveland and so perfect for how much LeBron had his shoulders. Because, you know, I knew so many people were like, oh, if he only dunked that last dunk against Draymond, that would have been the best ending ever. And I was like, no, it's a much better ending to have him knock to the floor, miss the first free throw, and then make this rattle in the second one to make it a four-point lead and ice the game. Because that's Cleveland right there. It's never going to be easy.
No, not
and
at
it's
all.
Never, and it's never going to be poetry.
No, it's really never. It's really not. I mean, anything that has happened good in Cleveland sports in the past, like, year. I mean, there's a UFC champion named Stipe Miocic. He's from Cleveland. He fought in Cleveland, and it looked like he got knocked out in the first minute of his fight in Cleveland, and then he won. But it's the narrative of coming back and rebounding from the lows and rebounding in LeBron for so many reasons that are sports-wise and just where he grew up and how he grew up resembles that maybe better than anybody, and that's remarkable for so many reasons.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So well, hey, thanks for talking to me. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you coming on the show. If people want to find your work, where can they find you on Twitter? And I know I mentioned at the top, but where can people find your shows and find your writing?
Absolutely. Twitter is @EdgeOfSports. I got a podcast. People can subscribe to it on iTunes, Stitcher, your podcast app of choice. Go to www.edgeofsportspodcast.com. Interviewed Kareem, Martina, John Carlos. Oh, it's just stuff at the intersection of sports and politics. And I'm a columnist and editor at The Nation magazine. People can go to thenation.com if they want to check out my stuff.
He mentioned John Carlos. That podcast came out, would have been last week when this podcast is going to drop. Go check that out. It was one of the most, and I'm not just saying this because Dave is on the show, one of the most interesting podcasts I've ever listened to, because John Carlos obviously is an icon for so many reasons. And just what he had to say, I think, is really important to listen to at this point where we're at in sports,
yeah,
and where we're at as a society.
I mean, imagine, he's a 70-year-old man who's now seeing people do what he did at the 1968 Olympics, and there's a statue of him that's now up in the new Smithsonian African American Museum, and he was just invited to the White House this week after being a pariah for many decades. And, you know, I wrote John Carlos's memoir, you know, so it's,
yeah,
like the roots with us run really, really deep. He's one of my best friends. So we're sitting across from a table just talking, and it was a great experience.
Yeah. So, Dave, thank you again so much. And, you know, and hopefully your Wizards do a little bit better this year than they did last year as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think they will. I mean, that's a whole separate discussion, but this is going to be a great, like, Scotty Brooks versus Randy Whitman test. Like, how much does coaching matter?
Yeah.
And let's see what happens.
Well, thank you again. And, you know, if you ever want to come back on or anything comes up again, we'd be more than willing to have you back.
Hey, when the Jim Brown book is out, I can't think of a show I'd rather come on.
You're more than welcome to come back. We'll book it. Thanks again, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.